This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kennison and Wang Xiaoning. Well, earlier it was just me and Xiaoning holding down the fort, but it appears we have a Roshan Kennison in studio. Welcome.
Well, why was I about to say welcome to you? Thank you for welcoming me into the studio. It's a nice, pleasant Friday morning.
It's Monday, guys.
I'm 3 days behind on everything right now.
You're either 3 days behind or you're 4 days forward. I like to think you're 4 days forward.
He's already looking forward to the weekend.
That sounds a lot better than me being 3 days behind. Let's go with that. But I was going to say, it's actually a really nice, beautiful Monday morning right now.
It is. So the sun is just coming up. It's 7:07 in the morning. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be talking about e-wallets in Malaysia and how losers are starting to emerge. But before that, let's take a look at the markets.
So over the weekend, Asian markets ended in a sea of red. Hong Kong was down 2%, quite a sharp drop there. Shanghai was down 0.6%. Japan was down 0.5%. Singapore was down about 1.5%. Korea was down 1.5%, and Singapore down about 0.2%, and Malaysia was down 1.4%. So about three markets there sharply down.
Yeah, especially in Hong Kong, that's quite significant, 2% drop, and there was a 36% surge in volumes also. But over in the US, stocks backed off from record highs and closed a week lower, following lower European and Asian equities, now running out a relatively mellow finale to the third straight month of gains for global benchmarks. So all three major indices were down 0.5% as trading resumed on Wall Street after the Thanksgiving break. But do note, it was only just half-day trading for the US. So shares of energy, consumer discretionary goods were the biggest decliners, while investors seem to be looking for signs of progress of a trade deal as the December 15 deadline looms even closer.
So on top of this, there's also the additional tension brewing over Hong Kong, with China's foreign ministry a warning of unspecified retaliations for US President Donald Trump's signing of legislation expressing support for protesters in Hong Kong. So for more on global markets this morning, we have on the line with us Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer of Jevons Global. Thank you for joining us, Kingsley. Now, as we mentioned a little earlier, US stocks were down from record highs at the end of last week. Do you think we'll see a renewed push for highs this week, or more profit-taking, perhaps?
Look, I think markets will probably tread water at this time, just until we get through that December 15th deadline for the US-China negotiations. And then that's simply because, in the past, when there's been such a deadline, we've often seen a little bit of rhetoric from both sides in the lead-up to it. So I think it'll be an uncertain time until people are confident that trade deal's in the bag, at least phase one, and also that there's no threat of further tariffs. So I just think it's going to be a range trading week, shall we say.
So taking into account that uncertainty around trade deal, how well markets have done year to date, how have you adjusted your asset allocation and what sectors are you looking to go into in 2020?
Well, through much of this year, we've been running what's called a barbell strategy with a number of defensive positions in areas like utilities and healthcare stocks, and also some pro-growth exposures in areas like enterprise software with Microsoft and other mining-related exposures in companies like BHP. The areas we've avoided this year have been things like automobiles, because that was really, really weak all around the world. But we think that we actually may be starting to turn in global industrial production data, and therefore we might see the autos pick up. Certainly the stocks are moving. So for 2020, if we have a big move, it will be into cyclical exposures and value stocks, and also those companies that benefit from a recovery in demand from consumers for durable items like cars.
And South Korea's exports, I mean, it's a closely watched bellwether for world trade, now fell more than expected in November, falling 14.3% year-on-year. Now, has this dealt a blow to some optimism that a prolonged slump in global demand may actually be bottoming out?
Well, certainly, as you mentioned, I mean, South Korea is really important because in addition to semiconductors, they also have a big automobile sector. They have shipbuilding and also household appliances. So they're a bit of a canary in the coal mine, and the fact that South Korea is still pretty weak shows that we shouldn't be too confident, we shouldn't count our chickens before they're hatched, that this turn in global conditions is really taken. But then on the other side, you know, it's always darkest before dawn. So a deep retrenchment, such as you've seen in the Korean data, South Korean data, it usually burns out once the other lead indicators are starting to pick up. So we'll be watching that closely to see if there is a turn in Korea.
So as you mentioned, right, Korean companies like Samsung are some of the biggest players when it comes to supplying of semiconductors for smartphones and other tech-related items. So what's your outlook on the tech supply chain going into 2020?
Well, earlier this year, the semiconductor industry was looking into the abyss of a potential slump. You know, smartphones, it looked like they may be peaking out, and there was a bit of a hiatus in new model launches. And then you also had the thing where Huawei, the Chinese firm, was under pressure from sanctions. But look, I think that's sort of plateaued now, and we're starting to see a pickup in demand, and it's particularly been driven by the rollout of 5G networks and the new semiconductors that are needed there. So firms like Taiwan Semiconductor that make chips for other firms on a contract basis, they're looking pretty solid. So we think that that's a good lead on supply chain generally, that the outlook is improving, and in fact probably pretty positive for 2020, as long as we fix these trade war issues.
Well, thank you very much, Kingsley. And that was Kingsley Jones of Jevons Global speaking to us from Sydney about South Korea, as well as what's been happening over in between the US and China. But also, in case you hadn't heard, Black Friday happened last week, and that is one of the busiest shopping days of the year, particularly for the US, and even for some of us here in studios, because I know for a fact that Wang Xiaoning, you were shopping on Black Friday, because I saw you during some meetings that we were supposed to be having.
Yeah, I was a little bit distracted about trying to quickly put in my order before anyone noticed. Yes, guilty as charged. Just a teeny weeny bit.
Linmark, did you shop on Black Friday?
I didn't. I actually forgot. I did all of my shopping, though, on 11/11. And I may do more shopping on 12/12. So, you know, it's also... some online shopping has also been having an impact on Black Friday, though. Traffic and sales at brick-and-mortar stores were hurt as more shoppers turned to the online platforms. That said, store traffic on Thanksgiving evening grew, possibly indicating a shift in when consumers are actually leaving their houses to shop.
Yeah, this is something that hasn't happened in several years, actually, and also shows how Thursday evening store openings are hurting what has traditionally been the day that kicked off U.S. holiday seasons. And according to data from Adobe Analytics, which tracks transactions at 80 of the top 100 U.S. retailers, online sales rose about 20%, reaching $7.4 billion on Black Friday, slightly shy of estimates of $7.6 billion. And Black Friday is increasingly turning into a day when shoppers don't necessarily have to flock to stores, but look online.
Yeah, its importance has waned over the last few years as more retailers also opened their stores on Thursday evening. Now, Adobe Analytics estimated that sales grew 14.5% to $4.2 billion on Thanksgiving. Then there's also the early holiday promotions and, what, let's face it, guys, year-round discounting nowadays. That's it. For most retail sales, Black Friday store traffic and sales data is not necessarily grim as consumers do continue to spend.
Yeah, so there's also just a lot more awareness now of the consumerism that surrounds the gift giving season, because in the US you do see some retailers even actually closing their doors on Black Friday to say, actually, hey, you know what, spend the day outside, don't shop, don't buy things that you don't necessarily need just because there's a discount.
Yeah, but I think the bigger thing here is that the bottom line is it comes down to winning the transaction, right? Whether it happens online or in the store, it's about making that sale. And we've seen the massive retailers respond to Amazon. So Walmart, Target, Best Buy, they have spent billions of dollars trying to expand their e-commerce operations to continue that online growth. And I think recently Target and Walmart have done very well. I think Target's earnings came out a week or two ago and had showed a lot of promise in their e-commerce platform.
But don't dismiss Black Friday, guys, because when you look at the numbers, right, one day of Black Friday is equivalent to one whole week of sales for the typical retailer in the US. So, you know, I think retailers are realistic. Anything that drives traffic to their stores, whether online or whether brick and mortar is something that they will continue to push. And it's good marketing. It's good advertising. So it's not going to go away.
Yeah, but that said, visits to stores fell a combined 3% during Thanksgiving and Black Friday compared with the same days in 2018. So it's interesting to see that this may not be indicative of the entire holiday season going forward.
Now, taking a look also this morning at a country slightly closer to home, Thai Beverage is considering an IPO of its brewery business in what could be Singapore's biggest listing in close to a decade. So shares of Thai Bev rose as much as 5.2% in Singapore trading, the most in more than 3 months. Now, sources told Bloomberg that the brewery unit listing could happen as early as next year, and the deal could include beer assets in Thailand as well as Vietnam.
Yeah, they're apparently looking for a valuation of as much as $10 billion, which is likely to be Singapore's biggest since 2011, when Hutchinson Ports Holdings Trust were listed for and raised about $5.5 billion. At a $10 billion valuation, the unit is likely to rank among the region's biggest beer companies, roughly on par with China's Tsingtao Brewery.
Now, this would still be far smaller than
Anheuser-Busch.
Asian's unit, which raised $5 billion in a Hong Kong share sale in September. That ranked as the world's fourth biggest IPO this year. Now, Thai Bev has confirmed it's weighing on an IPO, but did not disclose details like valuation or listing venue. But it's probably likely to happen because if I look at Bloomberg now, there is a trading halt on this stock for this morning. So I think we need to be prepared probably for a big announcement after 9 a.m. With regards to this IPO. And bear in mind, the share price has gone up the most in 15 weeks while trading volume actually tripled. And no, the Newswire confirms it's considering potential IPO of beer unit.
Yeah, and if you're not sure what Thai Bev is, this is the company that's famous for producing a lot of drinks, and one of them includes Chang beer, Archa, and a German inspired Federer brand. I've not really heard of this, but basically, this is the unit that is responsible for a very prominent beer brands, and they have promoted this overseas. I remember, I think Everton Football Club used to be sponsored by Chang beer.
And Thai Bev is also controlled by Charan Sirivadana Bhakti, who is Thailand's richest person with a net worth of about $19.5 billion. That's according to the Bloomberg estimate. But right now we are heading into a few messages. And up next, we'll be talking about e-wallets in Malaysia and how some losers are now starting to emerge. So be sure to stay tuned for that conversation after these messages. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.